I don't think he is as politically wounded coming out of this second impeachment as many, certainly on the left, but in a broad center of the American electorate as well, think he might be.
Michael Cruz is Politico's resident Trumpologist.
God, I do wonder if sometimes I've been sort of infected by sort of a Trumpian way of thinking. And maybe I'm totally wrong in this. Maybe people are tired of it.
And this is Nerdcast. President Trump has spent a lifetime turning near disasters into brand-building triumphs. So is this really the end? Or will the Senate break the pattern?
Every single person in the United States of America, and to some extent on planet Earth, right? Not to be like hyperbolic or grandiose, but like this stuff has been important and will continue to be important. And the idea that we can just sort of like flip the page and move on, to me, it almost borders on irresponsibility.
About a week ago, there was an attack on the Capitol. And a little less than a week from now, Joe Biden's inauguration. And in that time, an impeachment again.
The day is hard to describe for me.
Our own reporters are on the Hill, literally there, watching it with their own eyes, living through it. Congress reporter Sarah Ferris, for example.
It just looks so, so different than every other vote I've ever covered in my 6 years up reporting on Capitol Hill.
And all of this put together is a big part of now what has started a Republican Party war within itself.
The Republican Party is tearing itself apart right now over the role of Trump in their party and over the role of Trump in these attacks last Wednesday. And we're watching in real time as some members who completely surprised Capitol Hill by voting to impeach him. There was a couple members that voted yes and were all scrambling to make sure, you know, that wasn't a mistake or did he accidentally vote that way, because people were just so surprised.
What does this mean for the future of the country, and the future of American politics?
I feel like we are closer to a beginning than we are to an ending when it comes to Trump's influence on American politics.
Can we really anticipate how much political power Trump might have moving forward? Michael Cruz, thanks for being here.
Thanks. It's always good to be here. It's always good to be with you, Scott.
Your piece in Politico magazine this week is called How Trump Wins Impeachment Again. So, well, how does he?
By continuing to be a story, and I have every expectation that one way or another, he will continue to be a story. There is literally no piece of evidence from his past, which covers, you know, 3/4 of a century, that would suggest that he will fade away. And attention always has been the most important thing for him. And I think in some ways, a second impeachment on his way out of the White House has given him a new kind of fuel, a new kind of propellant.
Are you talking about kind of in the political sense, in the business sense, in the media sense, in terms of this like drive to be the story, like you said? We are already seeing consequences play out in a practical sense. We know that the House voted for impeachment. We know there's going to be a trial in the Senate. We know there's an outside shot, I guess, you know, that the Senate could choose to convict, although that would require 17 Republican senators to vote that way, more than the 10 Republican House members who voted to impeach. You're talking specifically about his political future, I guess, which is not something we usually talk about for ex-presidents.
I am talking principally about his political future, about the prospect of a continuation of his potency as a political figure, as a havoc wreaker, as a kingmaker. Obviously, it needs to be said that we don't know how this is going to play out. And he is facing legal jeopardy. He is facing financial trouble. And either of those two things, certainly a combination of both those things, that's going to be a drag on him. And we're just going to have to see how much of a drag and to what extent it will make it difficult for him to continue to wield political power, sway within Republican politics, sway within the American electorate and American life in general, but I don't think he is as politically wounded coming out of this second impeachment as many, certainly on the left, but in a broad center of the American electorate as well, think he might be, and are hoping he might be.
So let's jump into that in a second. But I guess first of all, take us through the backstory here. Like, what in his past have you kind of dug into as our resident Trumpologist that leads you to this conclusion of, you know, his inevitable bounce back ability?
This starts in earnest nearly half a century ago. In 1973, the Department of Justice sued Donald Trump, Donald Trump's father, and their company for racist rental practices in their apartment buildings in a handful of boroughs, a handful of places around New York City. This could have been, and for many would have been, a stain right out of the gate. Donald Trump was not even 30 years old, but he managed to turn that into not a stain, but a launching pad for everything that we've seen ever since. He did that by teaming up with the notorious Roy Cohn. He did that by employing many of the tactics and techniques that we've become accustomed to as a country over the last 5.5 years, but certainly they've been there for 50 years, denying, distracting, deflecting, just outlandish counterarguments to create headlines, to create attention, which is to create oxygen, fuel, and a certain kind of, at that time, fledgling celebrity. Again, what could have been a stain of that DOJ case did not prevent him, obviously, from getting a historic tax break from a beleaguered New York City to start his career as a developer and as a celebrity developer, as a marauding sort of swashbuckling public character within New York. You know, that DOJ case didn't officially end until 1982. In 1983, Trump Tower opened. So obviously it did not stop him. In the middle of the 80s, shortly after the opening of Trump Tower, he failed spectacularly as a professional sports owner. He had purchased the New Jersey Generals of the second tier United States Football League. He not only was a bad owner for his team, he literally killed the league in trying to challenge the NFL in, to say the least, misguided ways.
Well, who among us, you know?
He managed in similar ways to spin out of what could have been a reputational catastrophe by, among other things, fixing the Woolman Rink in Central Park and casting himself as a white knight, as a hero of the private sector, in contrast to a bumbling mayoral administration in New York at the time.
This is pretty interesting. I mean, so like obviously, like you've dug deep into the priors here. Let's dig into what's happening right now and kind of where you see it playing, kind of like with this frankly terrifying like base of background knowledge that you're bringing to the situation. So right now, he's been kicked off Twitter, his favorite political megaphone, along with I think like pretty much every other social network you could possibly think of. You know, the private companies are kind of taking what steps they can to separate themselves from his brand and his Republican Party, whether that's, you know, the PGA Tour taking a golf tournament away from one of his resorts, or folks saying they're not going to donate to Republican politicians who are aligned with him on this question of certifying the presidential election results. And then on top of that, as we saw in the impeachment vote on Wednesday, we see, you know, more and more Republicans seem to be joining Democrats and indicating that there was a point of no return. And now more and more is not a ton right now, but it's some, which is more than before. And most prominently among them, there's Congresswoman Liz Cheney, who's the number three Republican in the House, who voted for impeachment on Wednesday. You've got Senate Majority Leader, well, soon to be Senate Minority Leader, but the Senate Republican leader, Mitch McConnell, shocking Washington with you know, some of the indications he's been sending about his potential openness toward convicting the president in the Senate trial, about not whipping his caucus any particular way. So what is the counterpoint? What is kind of your main counterpoint that you see to that, to those developments, I should say?
I can make the argument and will make the argument that Donald Trump is about to re-enter terrain on which he is much more comfortable and far more effective. These last 4 years have been an enormous challenge for him. Was just ill-equipped to be the president of the United States. Much more comfortable to be the guy taking shots at the people who are in the most important roles. He needs foils and he needs feuds as fuel. And if you look at it through that lens, and I do look at it through that lens because of the work I've done trying to understand the preponderance of his existence, he has more ammunition as he exits the White House than arguably he ever has. It's not just the Democrats. It's not just the swamp. It's not just the establishment, quote unquote. One of his foils now is literally big tech, right? And he has seeded that ground, of course, throughout his presidency, but now it's very, very real. You can flip that and say, well, you know, it's a real problem that he can't communicate directly with nearly 90 million people through his very, very powerful megaphone of a Twitter feed, but he will find ways. And the extent to which he has new foils, big foils, and new feuds to give not only him fuel in the coming months and years, but then to transfer that outrage, that grievance to what is still a substantial portion of the American population that not only supports him, but thinks he should still be president, that is not something that is going to go away in the short or long-term future, the way I see it.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but the way I'm understanding is that what he needed in terms of support to wield power as president, and you know, unanimous Republican support and so on and so, is not what he needs to wield power as an outside agitator.
It's about to become much easier for him to be what he actually wants to be. He became president, well, lots of factors that allowed him to become president. But one of the ways he became president was by talking for decades about wanting to be president and talking for decades about what he would be doing if he were president. These last 4 years, he was president, and it was really, really hard. And when presented with very challenging problems, one historically challenging problem in the pandemic, he could not address these problems. I mean, in some strange defense, like, it was going to be a very, very hard thing for any person in that office at this time, of course, but he was uniquely ill-suited to address a real problem, not just from a managerial standpoint, but a psychological standpoint. Now he can decamp to presumably Mar-a-Lago and resume regularly scheduled activities of criticizing Joe Biden. And he will. And again, there is an ease with which he could have done that that has been, for now, eliminated with the lack of a Twitter account, lack of a Facebook page, et cetera, et cetera. But there are ways to communicate. There are ways to express himself. And I'm quite sure that he will express himself. There might be a period of some relative disappearance and relative quiet. But I'm basing this on an understanding of his entire MO for his entire life. That period, if there is even a period of relative quiet, will not be lasting and will not be permanent.
You know, you wrote in your piece that Trump got to this point, and the country got to this point with now President Trump, because nobody ever stopped Trump. Nobody whose interest it was in, whose clear interest it was in to ever stop Trump, actually took the steps necessary to stop him from moving on in this to this point. Can you detail a little bit about what you reported out?
So this is something that I've touched on in, at this point, dozens of pieces over this last half a decade. There are these important mileposts along the way for 30, 40 years when people in positions of power, both official or otherwise, could have stopped him or at least slowed him in much more significant ways. In the early 90s, in particular, he was billions of dollars in business debt and almost $1 billion in personal debt. But because his lenders from a variety of banks were so in over their heads, were so beholden to him, in addition to Trump being beholden to them, they let him skate, in effect. I mean, they gave him a $450,000 a month allowance because, frankly, he had gotten so big, they had helped him get so big, that it was now not in their best interest to have him just die a sudden financial death. They needed to extract essentially what they could out of him when he was damaged. And I think that's important. That idea is important to have in mind right now. You have some Republicans, you have 10 House Republicans, you have some members of the Senate who are talking about perhaps in a Senate trial sticking it to him, but it is still in their best interest. They have allowed him, lots of people have allowed him, but Republican electeds in Congress are near the top of that list, if not at the top of the list, have allowed him to get so big. And obviously, we're not even talking about the early 90s, for goodness sake. It's a difference of orders of magnitude. He has gotten so big that it is in the best interest, the most self-serving interest, the most pragmatic Machiavellian interest of so many people who have power, want to maintain power, to not kill him.
Metaphorically speaking, of
right.
course.
To chop his political head off, not actually chop his head off. But from the lenders in conference rooms in New York in the first half of the 1990s to state regulators in New Jersey trying to puzzle through some very similar version of the same issue with respect to his casino ownership in Atlantic City, to a litany of Republican politicians and people within, quote, the media execs. What are we going to do with him? Are we going to try to take advantage of him because he does bring a certain bigness? We can get something out of him too. And then at some point, there always comes a moment where these people who have in these ways enabled him to get to this point have to then really sort of abruptly change their tune and say, nope, that's it. But the longer you go, of course, the more permissive you get, the deeper you get into this cycle of enabling, the harder it becomes to put up your hand and say, that's a wrap. You've crossed the line. The line keeps moving. And through line of the life of Trump is that he is a master because of his shamelessness, if nothing else, at moving that line that cannot be crossed, quote unquote, more and more and more and more in a way that serves his needs. And where is that line? And we are at this point again with the presumptive Senate trial. Here's another shot. Here's another shot. I mean, you know, it's take two for Senate Republicans, to say nothing of all the other people who've had a version of this decision for the last 50 years at key moments in the rather remarkable life of Donald J. Trump.
Obviously, you know, we are very focused on this moment. We have to get through this moment in order to find out what comes next. But seeing this moment as just the first moment of potentially a kind of longer slide and the, you know, the way that the Trump brand and all political brands really are so deeply dependent on winning to fuel themselves. And obviously a Senate impeachment trial is a big opportunity for other Republicans, if they want to move in a different direction from Trump. But it's not the last opportunity that they'll have over the next however many years. Do you think it's possible that what we've seen kind of play out over the last week in terms of little bits and pieces of the party, the official party, will just kind of continue to drib and drab along? Or do you think that, does that, again, cut against everything that you've studied from the historical record here?
I mean, TBD, but this, to your point, this opportunity to chip away at Trumpism, if that's quite the right way to put it, is available in any and every, or most any and most every election, from president to Senate to House to state level elections on down. And it's not going to be a clear linear line. I think what we've seen just in the last week or so is that there's still plenty of stickiness, to say the least, for Trump and the Trump brand of politics. A giant chunk, more than half, right, of the GOP part of the U.S. House is still very Trumpy. And I don't see that going away wholesale. I feel like we are closer to a beginning than we are to an ending when it comes to not necessarily Trump the person, but Trump's influence on American politics.
Ultimately, like the fundamental problem with the scenario I laid out is that the people we're talking about, House and Senate Republicans, are arguably the most fluid or least loyal piece of his base, you know, as opposed to like seeing them as leading indicators. Like the kind of Washington Republican set has never been where he derived power from. There were important signals here and there, but it was never a main piece of his climb. And maybe, you know, because of that, we shouldn't expect it to be a main piece of his of any decline either.
There are exceptions, of course, but they are, for the most part, responding to and representing their constituents. That to me is, I guess, when you get right down to it, why I have trouble seeing this going away with the inauguration of Joe Biden or a more progressive or civic push. This is who we are. This is who we've become. And that's not to say we will be this forever, but you don't just undo this. You don't just turn back the clock. You know, Trump was a byproduct of years and decades. His presidency was made possible by years and decades of political, social, cultural trends, and those aren't going away any more than the slightly more than 74 million people who voted for Trump just a few months ago. The idea that we can just sort of like flip the page and move on, it just is not that tidy. And it's almost, it almost borders on irresponsibility.
Yeah. And it's not just about him. I think it's about like politicians in general. I think like we all, like Politico, like me in particular, whatever, like has like a habit of when we see like diminishment or diminishing happening, we expect it to just like continue. It's too easy to imagine trends just continuing forever in the moment that they're happening. And I think that is probably, it's almost certainly not true. Like, I think he has a much more durable base than that.
It's not just that he's been diminished. He's been, in some respects, disgraced. But the thing is, in his past, he's been disgraced before. Not like this, but he has been, and he's created moments. These are self-inflicted crises when anybody else would have receded, would have acknowledged that disgrace, would have been ashamed. And he has never and will never have the capacity for those emotions. Therefore,
it's his superpower.
Therefore, it is a kind of superpower, this capacity to turn disgrace into power, into fuel. He's done it before, and so why wouldn't he be able to do it again? Because one way to look at it is, yes, the disgrace is on a different order of magnitude. But flip that, if you're thinking of it in this way and looking at it through this lens, it is high octane. It is rocket fuel, this kind of disgrace, for somebody who is a grievance machine speaking to people who respond to and feel viscerally that grievance.
Well, Michael, thanks for joining us to tell us all about it.
Thanks for having me, as always.
All right, that's our show. Our producer is Annie Reese. Our senior producer is Jenny Amend, and our executive producer is Irene Noguchi. Our illustrator is Bill Cookman. If you like our show, then like it. Leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. It helps more people find the show. And check out some of our other podcasts. There's Politico Dispatch, Politico Energy, and Pulse Check, just to name a few. We'll talk to you again next week.